Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser said it all.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for another episode. On this episode, my guest is ECW original Pitbull, Gary Wolf. We talk about the Pitbulls, his partner, Anthony Durante, ECW, and much, much more. So let's take a break, and when I come back, I will have my interview with Gary Wolf.
Hey, you bums. We have to take a quick break.
Filsinger Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit FilsingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Filsinger Games, FilsingerGames.com to order now.
If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams.
Hey ho, everybody. Subscribe to the Pinhead Pod, the Ramones fan podcast, bringing you interviews, news, deep dives, and much more. Look it up on your favorite podcast platform. That is Pinhead Pod.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by half of the legendary tag team, the Pitbulls, Mr. Gary Wolf. Sir, how are you?
Doing great. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. I'm glad to be talking to you. I'm a big ECW guy. I was always a fan of you, the Pit Bulls. I'm a tag team guy, man. I love tag teams. I love tag team wrestling.
Nice.
So I'm looking forward to talking to you. Now, if I'm reading right, you grew up in New Jersey, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So did you grow up a fan of wrestling, professional wrestling?
Yeah. I mean, I used to watch it with my grandpa when I was a kid. But, you know, back then I was young and the guys were so big. You would never
think
you could become a wrestler, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So.
Well, you end up, I mean, speaking of that New Jersey area, you trained with Larry Sharp at the Monster Factory, right?
Yes, I did. The Pit Bulls actually graduated from the factory and our careers started when we got in the factory, put it that way.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You almost from right
from the get-go, you and Anthony Durante, you guys teamed pretty much right out of the gate. So I'm assuming, like you said, you guys trained at the same time. Did you guys know each other prior to the factory at all?
We're from the same hometown.
Okay.
We went to the same school. He had his clique. I had my clique. You know, I really didn't hang out with him, you know. And eventually we just bumped into each other at the gym one day, and we were just shooting the shit. And then we just started hanging out with each other. But we still were thinking about wrestling. I mean, never came across our minds.
Yeah. So did you guys decide to go to the Monster Factory together? Or did it just happen both of you decided to go?
No, we were living in Wildwood, New Jersey, because I had a businesses on the boardwalk.
Okay.
So what happened was the gym we were going to working out, they back then they used to tape Raw and you know, stuff like that. So they were having a show at the Wildwood Convention Center.
Okay.
I mean, it only held probably like 2,000 people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they asked us to do security. So we were like, hell yeah, man. We like wrestling. Let's check it out, you know?
Yeah.
And so we snuck in there Monday in the afternoon. The ring was already set up, and we've never been in a ring before. So we got in the ring. It was me, my partner, Andy Bernowski, who is Leatherface.
Okay.
Texas Chainsaw Massacres. He's my buddy. Mm-hmm. And then another wrestler who passed away, you know, a while ago, Crybaby Waldo, his name was.
Mm, okay.
And none of us were into the business yet. You know, we were still like 17 years old, 18 years old.
Yeah.
And we got in the ring and bumped around, and we ended up, that ring kicked our ass, man.
Yeah.
So Dick Worley was watching us, and he was laughing at us and shit, you know. And he did tell me, though. He's like, man, that big blonde guy, he'll be the next Hulk Hogan. Jesus. Because my boy Andy, he's like 6'6". He was like 300 pounds. I mean, he's a monster. And I was like, I don't know, man. I said, I think he's going to Hollywood. I'm not sure. You know, and he's like, you guys like it? I said, honestly, I said no. Now that I've been in a ring for the first time, I couldn't work out for 2 weeks. We were so sore.
Yeah.
But it's, beat the shit out of us.
Yeah, it's funny. Funny you mentioned Crybaby Waldo, because he was kind of a fixture in the Northeast there for a while. When I remember him from Pro Wrestling Illustrated in the 500s, popping up in there. And even us that weren't in the Northeast kind of knew that name and that gimmick for all those years.
Yeah. So he was pretty, like I said, we knew him.
Yeah.
He wasn't a wrestler yet. You know, we were just, like I said, this is 19, probably 87, you know, 88, right before 88. Because we started going to the, what happened was after we did it and we got the soreness went away, we decided, okay, let's go to the beach. Because I had a cheesesteak place on the beach between Hunts Pier and Maury's Pier.
Yeah.
So we would go out. And about knee level water and practice suplexes and shit like that. You know what I mean? And next thing you know, we were just like, you know, ain't that bad. I mean, that's, you know, what the fuck? So Anthony, you know, he was the first one, and he goes, I'm going to go to the Monster Factory and check it out. So he went, come to find out, he signed up. So he started going, and then it took me about 30 days. So he went a month ahead of me. I got some cash together, you know, I had a meeting with Larry and I said, yeah, I want to join. And he was cool. You know, back then it was a thrilling, it was $3,000, but back then that's a lot of money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I gave him 500 and he said, you can give me payments. So that's how cool. So Larry Sharp was there and Charlie Fulton was there. They were our teachers, but a lot of Vince McMahon people would be coming in, you know what I'm saying? Like Bam Bam was there.
Yeah.
Godfather was still there. They were just leaving.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we just started. And then next thing you know, guys would come down like Cowboy Bob Orton, you know, shit like that. Don Morocco. They'd come down and visit Larry and hang out, you know what I mean? And look and see, you know, what new talent you have, you know what I mean? And then honestly, that's what he kind of was. He was a scout for Vince. You know, because what Vincent ended up doing is seeing us working out. Cowboy Bob Orton must have said something. And one, he left, said goodbye to everybody, you know, hung out for a little bit. And then Larry said, come in the office. And we went in the office and he's like, look, Vince wants you two and maybe two other guys to start working in the tri-state area with them.
Yeah.
You know, to get experience.
Yeah.
And we were like, fuck yeah, you know, and it was cool because we would just have to drive. I remember our first town was Niagara Falls. Mm-hmm. So that was an 8-hour drive, but we didn't care. You know what I mean? We got to work in front of 35,000 people.
Yep.
So I remember driving there, hanging out, first time ever, and wrestling the Hart Foundation, wrestling a couple other tag teams, or Joe Brothers or something like that. They would pay us $150 each a night, pay for food, all per diem, hotel room. So, you know, back then you couldn't beat that. You know what I mean? We were so still green. And we were still learning. We were called, they called it like extra talent or something like that back in the day.
Yeah.
We carried out Macho Man Randy Savage and Sensational Sherry. Oh,
yeah, like on the throne and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at the magazine, you'll see me and Anthony up front.
Yeah.
And we were just an enhanced talent, they called it, something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they would pay us to do what they needed us to do. But, they would mostly put us together and made us a tag team and then then put us against all the tag teams. So it was cool. And then eventually we got in their good graces, especially with the boys, and they'd start taking us on tour. Mm-hmm. So like I was in Austria with all the, you know, the rockers, fucking all the fucking guys that were working back then.
Yeah.
And we're going in. We had to go against Superfly Snuka and Brutus Beefcake for 2 weeks in Austria. And we would get paid good, like $2,500, you know, back then. So we didn't really, you know, we were learning while working, just like Lex Luger, just like Nikita Koloff, you know, guys like that. You know, they learned while being on the ring, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy, especially being, you know, pretty much fresh out of the Monster Factory and doing that.
Well, we weren't even out of the Monster Factory.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
We would go back and be like, damn, man, we were killing each other every night here.
Yeah.
And now we were learning how to work. So we stopped killing each other and we just started working right. And then next thing you know, I ended up meeting Kevin Sullivan right before I started going to school. We went to spring break in Daytona, and I walked up to Kevin Sullivan, introduced myself and shook his hand, and he invited me over for dinner with me and my boy, and we hung out with him and woman. That was the first guy I met in the business.
Yeah.
Was Kevin Sullivan. So he helped us out dramatically, and you know, he just said, send me a tape, and we sent him a tape. He sent that to Don Morocco and King Curtis in Hawaii, and that was it, bro. I mean, King Curtis got us booked on our first tour ever. Was we were in New Zealand against the British Bulldogs versus the American Pitbulls.
Yeah. So tell us about that. Who came up with that? I mean, did they ask you to come up with a name on your own, or how did that name and that gimmick come up?
Well, I always had dogs, so I had tons of pits.
Yeah.
And I would read them and stuff like that. And then we were both fans of the British Bulldogs. I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But yeah. We were trying to figure out, you know, we're only 5'9", 5'10", you know, that's not with lifts, you know, with lifts in our boots, we can get to be, I would probably be 5'10 and a half and Anthony would be like 6 foot.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was like, you know, we're kind of short, stocky. So why don't we just do the gimmick? We're, you know, they're the Bulldogs. We can be pit bulls. What's the difference?
Sure.
So I remember in 88, I trademarked that. So I've owned the name, the Pit Bulls, since 1988.
Yeah. I mean, it's been there pretty much your entire career, right? I mean, different variations, right? The American Pit Bulls. I mean, I think one time some places called you the Pit Bulldogs, but then, and then obviously the Pit Bulls, which most people.
Yeah. That was down south, you know, Robert Fuller would be that Pit Bulldogs.
Yeah. You know? Well, you got to put some of that southern flavor on it, I guess, you know?
Yeah. I mean, in the beginning we were first called to, you know, whenever, remember, I don't know if you remember, but in the '80s, everybody was the Express.
Sure.
So
Yeah.
at first we were the Pitbull Express.
Yeah. Oh man, that I don't think that works. But
Yeah.
yeah, that was an 80s thing. Everybody, yeah, had a an
Yeah. So
express or a connection or
we did that probably for a couple of months and then that was changed, you know. So
well, tell me, in 91 you guys went to New Japan. Now tell me about this name, because in New Japan, were you guys called the Mad Bull Busters?
yes, we started going to Japan in 1990.
Okay, so what is up with
Yeah.
what is the Mad Bull Buster? What is that?
They wanted to, well, since I own the Pit Bulls, they wanted to own the rights.
Oh,
They're
okay.
like, New Japan's like Vince,
Yeah,
it's their
sure.
big.
Yeah.
So they were like, we, it's just in Japan, it's almost calling us the Pit Bulls anyway.
Gotcha.
They,
Yeah.
they'd be like, Mad Bull Bastas, and the place would go crazy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they knew us as the Pit Bulls because they were American fans, even though they were Japanese. They liked our gimmick, and we did pretty good our first tour. I mean, we were going over there. Vader and Bam Bam were the tag team champs at one time.
Yeah.
Hase and Sasaki were the champs when we were there. We actually wrestled them for the belts. So it was a good experience. And we got to meet guys that were there for, older guys like Tiger, Jet Singh, Tiger Chung Lee, who's a silver medalist in the Olympics as a wrestler. I mean, he stretched me, man, a couple of times. Master Chono. I mean, I would do 45 minutes with Thunder Liger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
you had to be in shape when you got there. I mean, that was one thing you had to be ready for.
Yeah.
Killer Bees was with us. Wild Samoans was with us. We had a pretty good, Owen Hart, I think, was with us on that tour. We had a pretty good group of guys. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But
Yeah, well,
it was interesting. First, 21 days was our first tour, which is that's 3 weeks. 18 matches in 21 days is pretty rough, especially back then. You gotta
Yeah.
remember back then. I mean, back then we would beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
I heard now it's like completely different, I heard.
Yeah. Well, of course, most people remember you guys from ECW, but when you went to you guys first went to ECW in 92, right? I think for just like a month or so. But then
We were
you.
going, listen, we were going to ECW from 1988. Once we got in wrestling school, Larry tried to get us booked on as many shows as we possibly can, And we were in Tri-State Wrestling Alliance,
Sure.
which was okay.
Good
That
arts.
turned that Joel Goodhart's and Todd Gordon's.
Yeah,
So once Todd met us, realized we're going to Japan, he hired us immediately.
Yeah.
So we were the second tag team in Eastern, or you want to call it Extreme Championship Wrestling. We
Yeah.
were the second tag team to ever hold the tag belts.
Sure.
Okay,
Yeah.
how were they called? Two big guys, they were always in black.
Oh, the Super Destroyers?
Super Destroyers had the belts first, and then we
Yeah.
took them from them. And
Yeah.
then, like I said, Todd would always use us, and it
Yeah.
was Tri-State Wrestling Alliance. I
Yeah.
mean, I remember one time Ric Flair and Abdullah Butcher shared a locker room with us, and
Yeah.
we wrestled earlier. They're getting ready to go out, and we were supposed to go out also because Abby put a blade on every finger, and he was going to cut everybody. And I remember Ric Flair, first time I ever met him. And Abdul, they were like, you two guys, I heard about you guys. You guys are cool, but I don't want you going out there during this match." I go, "Yeah, but the booker wants it." He goes, "I don't care what the booker says." I was like, "Okay." He's like, "Here, hold our jewelry. I don't want nobody to steal our jewelry." So they gave us, I mean, I had a hand, like two hands full of like watches and diamonds and
Yeah.
had to be almost a $500,000 worth of fucking jewelry there, bro.
Yeah, especially for Flair and Abby. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I'm talking back then. This is when they would dress up with suits and all their gold and diamonds, and it was crazy, man. Because
Yeah.
Tri-State used a lot of fucking talent. You know what I'm
Yeah,
saying?
they did, yeah.
And it was all good. Because I remember, I just remember telling Todd, look, I don't have no problem. I want to keep working for you, but I'm going to go to Japan in 1990. I said, so, after Japan, I'll come back. And they were like, absolutely. This is your house. You helped build it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're called the Originals.
Yeah.
We're the original ECW. It was Eastern. Then it turned to Extreme.
Yeah. Well, what happened with that run there where you just came back by yourself? For what Ben, you had the TV title run and everything. Where was Anthony during that run?
Okay. We just got back from Japan. I had to get knee surgery. I had tweaked my knee and going against Lager. It was like almost the last night and my foot got caught. And when he jumped on me, my leg got caught behind me and it popped my knee. So I had to get surgery and get it fixed.
Okay.
So I told Ant, don't stick around and wait for me, So Otto from Germany called and asked him to go to Germany.
Oh,
so
he went, gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
So he went to Germany to work. I stayed in our hometown because I didn't want to stay at my girls in the city. I said, fuck that shit. I'll go home to Ma. I was only 20 something, young, early 20s,
Yeah.
So I was like, I'll just get better. And I'm getting better and I'm getting better. So I'm all healed up. And one night I'm just, it took about, they said it would take 12 months. Probably took me about 9. And then I've had knee surgery since then, and I'm done in like 6 months. Because once you get used to it, recover, and So I just remember sitting home one night. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning, and there's Eastern Championship Wrestling, and it's on fucking TV.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. I remember calling Sandman because I got him into business.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember calling Todd, and I'm like, what the hell's going on? When did you guys get on TV? He was like, oh, man, we've been rocking. We're getting on some cable networks here and there. He goes, what are you doing? Are you back from Japan? I said, yeah. I said, I got back, shit, probably like 6, 7 months ago. I said, but I had to get surgery. And he's like, well, where's Anthony? I said, Anthony's still in. He went to Germany to work. And he actually tug up with Larry Cameron.
Uh-huh.
He took my spot, and Larry ended up dying over there, which was horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's totally another story.
Yeah.
I could tell you someday. But so Todd, was like, "Well, come down to the arena, come to the arena Saturday night." So I showed up at the arena. He goes, "Bring your gear." I brought my gear. They just fired Eddie Gilbert, and they just hired Paul Heyman.
Mm-hmm.
So Paul saw me and he was like, hey, how you doing? I said, nice to meet you. I said, I think I ran into you before, down on the road. Because we got to remember, we were lucky. We got to work with Lawler in that territory. We got to work with Jeff Jarrett in his territory. And then we got to work with South Atlantic.
Yeah, territory. Right. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So
we
were lucky. We were working 6 nights a week. Vince was getting us ready because he was going to bring us in. That's what it came down to. So, but we picked Japan instead, and that was just our way. But, I just called Todd up. He said, show up. I met Paul. Paul said, get dressed. I worked that night, and then he gave me a couple more, nights, and then he said, look, I'm going to ask you to do me one more favor. And I think that night I worked against Hawk from the Road Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
Put him over, and then the next night, that I remember that night, he came up to me, Paul Heyman, and said, "I need you to come to New York this week and come to the studio because that's where the studio was. It was in the guy's basement."
Yeah.
yeah, it was funny, man. So, but he never knew, like, even if I can do a promo, he just figured I could because I did work for Paul Jones and George Scott, and I was on their TV.
Yeah,
and we were so good. We honestly turned the Nasty Boys heels.
Yeah,
I mean baby faces.
Yeah,
we turned them baby faces because we were baby faces first, and we hated it.
Yeah,
I begged them and begged them every time we did TV. I begged them, can we please cut a promo? They're like, nope, nope.
Yeah.
So finally, they let us, and
this was in South Atlantic, right?
Yeah. So we cut the promo and they were just like, oh my God, like your natural heels. This is fucking great.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember Paul Jones is like, yeah, but the nasties are coming in. And they're like, hey, I don't care if the nasties are coming in. We're going to have to turn them baby face, you know, and that's how he left it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I, for us to be heels and they're baby faces, you know, that was, I thought it was impressive, but like I said, we didn't think we'd be able to do that, but next thing you know, we were in the stud stable. That's how good of heels we were.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you had that TV title run, you only held it for a month. Why was it only a month? Was it, I mean, I'm assuming, cause right from you, it went to Mikey and they were doing that, you know, that whole underdog thing with Mikey. Was that just kind of getting caught up in that build of Mikey?
Yeah. And then what I did was, I didn't even want the title. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I told Paul Heyman I don't want it. And he looked at me like I was nuts.
Yeah.
And my partner's in Germany. And he was like, oh, okay. Well, why don't you just, you know, get hold the strap for a while and let you drop it. And then when Anthony comes in, we'll tag you guys up. So he convinced me, and I, you know, and like an idiot, I didn't realize how prestigious that title was.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
sure.
And I'm so, I mean, and honestly, to this day, I am extremely glad that I did take the belt and held it, because maybe 25 guys had that belt. That's a prestigious ECW television title that not many guys held. And sure, the guys that did hold that belt, if you name their names, they're all top fucking wrestlers.
It is. It's a who's who. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, from Dean Malenko to Eddie Guerrero to Chris Benoit, you got
Scorpio,
Jericho, Too Cold Scorpio,
Van Dam. Yeah, it's a
Van Dam, Jerry Lynn. I mean, come on, man. Shane Douglas.
Yeah.
I mean, to be in that category, I'm very humbled. And, you know, and my partner, he also got the TV belt.
Yep.
You know, what tag team have you heard that had, you know, multiple times tag team titles in the company, plus tag team titles every single company we went, from Puerto Rico to Japan, Australia, we always won the tag belts.
Okay? Yeah.
So not only did we have the tag belts and ECW, we both were television title holders.
Yeah.
That's impressive to me. So.
Sure. Yeah. And yeah, like you said, Anthony, you know, Anthony returned, you guys went on a hell of a run, right? I mean, you were the backbone of that tag division, but we got to talk about, right? I know I'm sure you've talked about it a million and one times, but I don't think I can talk to you without talking about the broken neck.
Yeah, I mean, I was a shoot. I broke my neck, man.
Sure, yeah. Heat Wave 96, right? Shane Douglas broke your neck. You know, there was the spot was the DDT.
I took the bump. He gave me the move, but I took the a wrong bump.
Okay, so I was going to ask you, right? It was a DDT on the TV belt.
It was actually a shoulder breaker.
Oh, shoulder breaker. Okay.
I took it like a DDT.
Gotcha.
So I screwed up. Plus, I just had surgery done to my bicep being reattached. So I didn't have full strength in my right arm either.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
by me taking the bump the wrong way, the top of my head actually hit the belt and I heard crack and I broke my neck, bro.
Yeah. But man, like, you know, the saying go, right? You finished out. And it's just wild to think it's, you know, man, and injuries are bad, right? And a broken neck's bad, but if there's
I was knocked unconscious.
Sure. Yeah. But if there's ever you, whatever, man, taking a bad scenario and turning it into something, it's this broken neck, because this became one of the hottest things ever in ECW.
Oh yeah, but believe me, it wasn't easy for me.
I know. I bet not.
I mean, I remember telling Todd Gordon, and he was just like, "No fucking way."
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And then, you know, I mentioned it to Paul, and he was like, "No fucking way."
Yeah, I mean, you don't even know if you can come back from a broken neck sometimes, right? You depending on what it's like.
Well, the doctor told, I asked the doctor straight out. I said, what is my, do I have to retire now? Or because I didn't know whether or not I had to get surgery.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like the doctor told me, he goes, your muscle saved your life. Mm. So what happened was when I broke my neck, all my muscle got tight, and then the disc didn't move.
It just okay. So how long did you have to wear the halo for?
6 weeks.
Okay. Man, that had to be torture. I can't imagine having that thing screwed.
Yeah, that's hell. I mean, 6 pounds of pressure each bolt in your skull.
Yeah, I mean, there's just no way to get comfortable. I'm imagine when you're wearing that.
No, I was up for 10 days.
Yeah.
They, like at first, I was just concerned, they're like, well, we don't have to do surgery. I'm like, all right. You know what I mean? He goes, your muscle saved you. I mean, we've never seen anybody with a broken neck walk in here like you did. They go, so they were pretty surprised.
Yeah.
So I asked him, when can I get back in the ring? And he just looked at me like, you fucking crazy motherfucker. You know what I mean? He was only a couple years older than me, this guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he just goes, well, he goes, I'll be honest with you. I say, give yourself 6 months. So what I did was I gave myself, instead of six, I gave myself 8. And then that gave us 2 more extra months to promote the whole angle, because once he said I was okay and the doctors talked to both Todd and fucking Paulie, and more or less they said it's up to me to come back. You know what I mean? So I fucking worked my ass off.
Yeah.
Once I got the halo off, I worked my ass off, man, to get back.
Yeah. And I mean, and while you're out, right. I mean, there was a hell of a feud with Anthony and Shane, right. Yes. Great feud. And then, then there was the incident, right, where Shane jerked you by the halo that you had on. Now, talk to me about this, though. When did that ideal come about? Was there discussions prior that, hey, when we get to this point, let's do this? Was it a spur of the moment? I mean, not spur of the moment, but I mean, kind of at that time discussion. When did they have these discussions that, hey, let's use this halo in the angle?
Yeah, I was in the arena that night, and Paul's like, we got to do something. Because he told me, he's like, come in tonight. I already been back to the locker room once or twice, but it would freak everybody out.
Yeah.
So I came back for that one night, and then he was like, all right, this is the idea I came up with. And Shane was just like, no fucking way. I'm not fucking doing it. There's no way I'm going to do it. This is insanity. What I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm like, come on, let's just get it done, man. Let's just fucking do it.
Yeah.
So my left arm was slightly paralyzed from the broken neck. Uh-huh. So I didn't get all my feeling back yet right away. So I always kept that in my pocket. So when we went in the back, they wanted to do this. We were thinking, look, you just can't. If I took just imagine if I took a regular back bump.
Yeah, I mean, how do you work it? I mean, how do you work that? I mean,
but no, just imagine if I took a regular back bump instead of the way I fell. It would have killed it.
Sure.
We wouldn't have got the response we got.
Yep.
The way I fell down is why people jumped over the guardrail to attack Shane Douglas. Because they were so fucking pissed off, bro.
Yep. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's white heat. Shane Douglas told me straight up, he goes, Gare, I thought I got shot, stabbed. I didn't. He goes, I went from the fucking ring to the locker room, into the Cadillac, and out the fucking back door that fast.
Yeah.
People were chasing them. I mean, the police lost control.
Yeah.
They had to stretcher me out of the building, put me in an ambulance, take me away. In the meantime, Shane Douglas thought he was dead and got shot or stabbed. He got punched in the face like 8-9 times. He had to make sure Francine got out of there without getting killed. It was fucking insanity, man. That's when we knew this angle is on like popcorn.
Yeah.
That's why Paul Heyman brought fucking Rick Rude in, man.
Sure. Yeah.
Rick Rude was there. to put the Pit Bulls back together again, man.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not only is this one of the hottest bits ever in wrestling, but you're doing it in front of a smart crowd, right? The ECW, yeah, that exactly. Philly crowd, which is smart, is not easily worked.
And if I took that bump, bro, and they would have shit on it.
Sure,
bro.
That's right.
They would have been like, you fucked up, you know, like you're lying to us. And no, they took it so seriously, they jumped over the guardrail.
Okay? That's one of those things where you're like, oh, I know wrestling's a work, but man, shit, that doesn't look like a work. That's a shoot. It looks, I mean, you know, that's crazy. So where were you in your recovery when that happened? I mean, how close honestly, you were returning?
I was just getting it all taken off. I was getting ready to get it taken off.
Okay, gotcha. So you were?
I was already like 6 weeks, 7 weeks in.
Gotcha. Okay. So, I mean, yeah. So it was risky, but you were fairly safe, right? I mean,
yeah, I was locked in. It's locked in. It's all in my body. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can't move your neck at all. That's the only way it's going to heal. You know, the bone, just like if you break your arm, you got to put it in a cast or some kind of brace. You can't move it. If you move it, it'll never heal.
Yeah, right.
So was, that's was, why because they wanted to put the halo on me at first, and I told them, fuck no, man, I ain't putting no fucking skull. Screws in my skull, and I said I see people with those things on, and it freaks me out. I said I'm not fucking gonna be one of them, and they looked at me like, oh, okay, you're a big tough wrestler, but you won't let us put a halo on you. And I'm like, fuck no, man. I said no. So they put me in the hallway, the mind fuck me, and while I'm in the hallway, this 14-year-old kid gets pushed by. He was just in a car accident. And he had a halo on.
Oh, yeah.
And the doc came back out. He's like, all right, tough guy. Did you see that little kid? He's only 14. I said, all right, motherfucker. I said, give me a cocktail or something. Give me something.
Yeah.
And then I'll go and you can put the halo on me. I said, because you're wide awake when they do it, bro. You're not asleep.
Yeah.
It sucks, man. You're wide awake and they're drilling this shit. It's like a fucking Saw movie, man. And they're like, you got like eight doctors on you and they're all got beepers that are going off and going crazy. And they're making their phone calls, you know, to see who's dying, who's not dying. But in the meantime, they're trying to get my neck straight. So when they put this halo on, it heals, you know, it heals right.
Yeah.
If it's not straight, then they got to take it off and do it all over again after the x-ray.
Man, I can't imagine the sounds.
it was insanity, man.
Yeah.
They strapped me down because they were afraid I was going to get up and just start beating the shit out of them. And yeah. I was, man. That's how mad I was. But I couldn't do anything about it, man. You know, it was just letting them know. They're like, how'd you get here? I said, I drove. They go, stop lying. I said, I'm not lying. Here's my fucking valet ticket, man. I drove here from my chiropractor, and he gave me a script to get a CAT scan, and that's what I did. And now you guys strap me down, and you're telling me I got a broken neck. I said, I thought you'd die if you break your neck.
Yeah, really?
And, you know, they were like, you should have, or at least you shouldn't be breathing, because that's what she told me. I was just like, what? So you got to remember, crazy. This happened on a Saturday night. I didn't get into the hospital till Monday.
Man. So was there any heat between you and Shane over this for a bit? I mean, I know there was a little bit of discrepancy on whose fault was, you know, I mean, it's kind of the heat of the moment, right? That's part of it. But
yeah, I mean, my people were calling his house up.
Yeah.
We're going to come to your house and get you.
Yeah.
He called me up fucking crying, man. He's like, dude, these people think it's so real. I mean, I know your neck's broke, but they're calling my house. I got kids, man. I got a wife. And I'm like, dude, I'll handle it. So I had to handle shit, but it was a shoot. I mean, yeah, at first I was pissed, but later on I just started thinking about it. And then I seen him do the same move to Anthony, and I seen how Anthony took it.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, he was trying to tell me, you know what I mean? But you got to remember, we were pretty out of control, man. That locker room was crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in the locker rooms in WWF when it was 88, 89, and they didn't even have a drug policy yet.
Yeah.
So imagine that locker room. These guys are making mad money.
Yeah, and even when all things go right, man, and everybody's does it right. I mean, shit still happens. I mean, it's there's never a guarantee, right? I mean, no matter, everybody can do their thing, and you know, stuff's, you know, it's a dangerous, you know, business. And
yeah, you know, like I said, I messed up, man. I mean, I'm lucky. I'm very lucky.
Yeah. So what you left your ECW there around 97 for a while. What led to you leaving? For a bit.
Vince called us. Told us to come talk to them. So they put us against the Headbangers that night.
Mm, yeah.
A good match. We worked the Headbangers a million times. They came out of the Monster Factory also. Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't like we could have did that match with our eyes closed.
Yeah.
And it was a good match, and they were going to put Terry Reynolds with us, and we were going to go work for Vince. And then, you know, we're waiting. I remember Larry Sharp, you know, he set everything up, and then he's like, all right, well, look, well, while we're waiting, I got a gig for you in California for 7 days with Harley Race. Why don't you guys go down there, do that? You can make 10 quick $1,000, come back, and I'll find out what the fuck's going on with Vince. So we went, we did that, came back. I was like, what's going on? You know, and he goes, I still didn't hear nothing. I go, this is bullshit. You know, we should have heard something by now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, it doesn't take a fucking rocket scientist. You know what I'm saying? We had the same meeting with Vince fucking back in 88 and 89 before we went to New Japan. So I was just like, all right, well, you know, he's like, well, Kevin Sullivan called me, and Mark Lewin is starting a company in Australia. It's called Hardcore Championship Wrestling. And they have all the WWF stars were there. Wild Samoans, Headhunters, the two big heavy guys, the Bruise Brothers, the Pit Bulls, Can-Am Express. They were the tag teams, man.
Yeah.
You know, these are top tag teams. You know, Nails was the heavyweight champ. Hawk was another guy. They had the New York Giant that was there. Big, big guy. He worked at that strip club in New York. I forget his name, though, but he was a big Italian guy. Huge, giant guy.
Oh, you talking about the guy who was in ECW for a while, Sal?
Yeah, maybe it might have been Sal. Yeah,
yeah.
But he wasn't really heavy. He was like all muscle.
Yeah, okay.
And then the Canadian Tiger, Mike Lozansky, was another guy that was there.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool. You know what I mean? We'd work 4 nights a week. We would do Melbourne. No, we would do Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne, Adelaide, and then we would live in Melbourne. So when we were in Melbourne, we would always do TV.
Yeah.
Every week, you know, we would do TV in Melbourne, and we stayed there. And it was cool because we would go to the casinos and do our press conferences. And what was great was we had the belts, me and my partner. And what did the casinos do? Gave me and my partner VIP fucking cards. So anytime we wanted to eat, because they paid for everything. All we had to do was pay for our food.
Yeah.
So every week I got paid. You know, it was like working in Puerto Rico. You know, we'd work 4 nights a week, and we were making you know, a few thousand, like almost $3,000 a week. You know what I'm saying? And
so yeah.
We can't bitch. It was good money. You know, and living in Australia was awesome because it's seven women to one man.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you did come back to ECW around 2000, right? The TNN kind of times. Then what, when you came back for that little run, what were some of the differences you were seeing then from before, right? Because it's kind of a different type company in those years.
Well, it was weird because all the guys that were young fuckers when I was there are now in the top positions.
Yeah, yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And a lot of them had attitudes because, you know, the Pit Bulls were the Pit Bulls. You know, people hated taking our finish, the super bomb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you didn't have a strong neck, your head is hitting the back of that fucking mat. You know, and I guess Yeah, I mean, any tag team that came in ECW had to go through us.
Yeah.
Public Enemy, then us.
Yeah.
So, but it wasn't the same, you know what I mean? I worked a couple of gimmicks with Briggs.
Yeah.
I think they put me with Rhino in Chicago a couple of nights. We had great matches, me and Rhino.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he was going to let me stick around, but it was different. Like, you know what I mean? It was just another, it was a different group of guys that were running it. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? The asylum, put it that way, you
Yeah.
know? And I was one of the old guys, more or less, like, what are you doing back here? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was like, all right, no big deal, you know, because WCW was going to hire us.
Sure.
So I was like, you know, screw it, you know?
Well, and around in 2001, when you heard about ECW folding and going out, were you, I mean, how'd you hear about, were you surprised at all?
Well, yeah, because Bischoff told me, because
Oh, yeah.
we were getting ready to. What happened was I was home one night. It was a Monday night, and they were coming in to do Monday Night Nitro in Philadelphia. And they were calling me from the jet. So it was Bischoff, Terry Taylor, Kevin Sullivan, Diamond Dallas Page, and Raven. They were all on the phone, and it was me on the other line. And because I always did business for the Pitbulls, because I would get us the most money. So I told Anthony, let me handle the business aspect, you know, letting, you know, you take care of the other stuff. He was like, all right, no problem, you know, because I, like I said, I would get us more money than he would. Because Anthony was a soft, even though he was a mean guy, he was a softie.
Yeah.
So, what was I saying? You got to remind me.
I was talking about hearing about ECW folding.
Yeah, so Bischoff, you know, they said meet us at the stadium. We want to talk businesses. Are you guys ready to come in? And we're like, fuck yeah, we're ready to come in. And he's like, all right, you know, we're thinking about December pay-per-view, and we're bringing you in against the Steiners. And I was like, I'm down 100%. And you know, he goes, so we met him at the stadium, at the Spectrum, the building. They brought Kevin Sullivan brought us in the back. We were in the office with Bischoff for a while. He said, go get dressed. So we went and got dressed. And then you know, they sat down with us and they were like, all right, we want to bring you in against the Steiners for Christmas pay-per-view, and you're going over with the belts, and you guys are gonna have the belts. And then you're gonna And he was going to give, they were going to sign us to a $1.5 million 3-year deal contract. So I knew once we did the 3 years, we'd sign another 3 years and then we'd retire. So he was like, all right, you know, or you want to do night to night. And I remember Kevin Sullivan was tapping my leg like, no night to night, because they could fire you any night. Sign a 3-year deal and you're locked in. Even if they don't use you, you'll still get a check every week at your house. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, no, we'll do night, we'll do a 3-year deal, you know, and I'm expecting to do another one. And he was like, okay, I'd like to hear that. I'd like to hear that, he goes. So he goes, you call me up Monday. I remember calling Bischoff on Monday afternoon to get my flight, me and Anthony's flight information, because also we were getting, we had to move. Like, we were going to keep our row homes in Philadelphia, and we were going to move, we had to move to either Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, or Florida if we want to work for WCW. That was the agreement. So we were like, fuck it, you know, we'll leave our houses up here because my they were already paid for. So we didn't care, you know, we'll just go rent a condo or something like that down south, you know, and that's what we were going to do. And I fucking called him up and he's like, are you sitting down? And I'm like, why? I'm like, what do you got bad news? He's like, fuck yeah, I got bad news. He goes, Vince bought all WCW, everything. Ted Turner sold everything to him. He goes, he goes, they put a freeze on me. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, I'm not allowed to sign any new talent from this moment on. He goes, from he's reading me the letter and he's like, from 12 o'clock on, no more new talent to be signed. And I'm just like, you gotta fucking be kidding me, man. And he's like, I'm so sorry. And I was just like, fuck. And then that's when we said screw it, and we went to fucking went to Australia and lived in Melbourne.
Yeah, so and I don't want to go in. I don't want to go into details, but in 2003, how did you hear about Anthony passing away?
I was sitting home and I was watching the news, and Connecticut and New Jersey are not that far. You know what I mean? And
Yeah.
it did, something came up and said, two people found dead, shot, and blah, blah, blah. And that's all they said. They didn't say nothing about wrestler. They didn't say nothing, man. So I'm home. I'm just doing my daily thing. You know, I'm getting ready to go to the gym. So I went to the gym. And a girl came up to me that I knew, to me and my girl that was with me, and said, I'm so sorry I heard what happened to Anthony. And I was just like, what are you fucking talking about? And that's when they told me. So then I went home and made my phone calls, and I was sick because we just got a call 2 weeks ago from the Road Warriors. Animal Joe called us up. He called me up and said, do you guys want to work us in Connecticut for a big show they're having there? And Vince asked us to come in and said, bring whoever you want. So we asked you guys, do you want to come and work with us? And we were like, yeah. So it was great, you know. So like I said, and then next thing you know, Anthony passed away. A week later, Mike from the Road Warriors passed away. Now tell me how weird that is, man. Okay, so we were getting ready to work each other in 3 weeks, and they both died within 2 weeks of each other.
I mean, I gotta imagine. I mean, it's you didn't. I mean, you didn't really. I mean, you didn't lose a tag team partner, right? I mean, you lost a brother. I mean, this is someone your entire career was pretty much tied to. I mean, more or less the entire time. I mean, from training on. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah, I bet. And but I mean, and let's wrap this up. I don't want to keep you too long here. I know you've got some prior commitments, but after ECW and everything else, right, and all those things, and you've stayed active in the independents for a while. And you were a trainer for CZW for a while. You've written an autobiography. You've hosted a podcast. I mean, you're always active and busy and involved in the business and everything else. So, as we sit here, in 2025, what's next for Gary Wolf?
Well, guys, you're gonna have to find out yourselves because I ain't telling you.
All right. Well, that
Go
leads me.
out, go out and get Pitbull Unleashed. It is number six right now in the top Amazon of wrestling books. It's number 49 in all sports books. I'm talking all sports books. So get out there, get that book. It's called Pitbull Unleashed. Check it out. It's a good read, and you could. Guys, you'll know probably things you've never known about me and what I've done.
I mean, we touched on some highlights, some it was a few points here and there, but that's I mean, it's nothing. Nothing. I mean, we could have talked for hours on your career and everything else, but I wouldn't even want to do that because people need to buy the book. They want to hear those stories. They want to know
Yep.
all the rest of it. They go buy the book. I'll put a link in the show notes directly to that in Amazon. So guys, if
Yeah,
you want
you get it
the
on Amazon, Walmart.com. There's Sell Barnes and Noble. Everybody has it, man.
Well, yeah, I'm gonna make it easy. If anybody, if you don't have the book, you want it, bam, go in the show notes, click the link, order the book. Easy to do.
Nice.
Can't recommend that enough. And speaking of that, right? Always, you're always, like I said, you're active. You're doing things, whatever. How can fans follow you and keep track of what you're doing when those things unfold? Signings, appearances, whatever it is
Well, I
that
have a
the Pitbull does.
I'm on Twitter, and then I'm also on Facebook. It's Gary Wolf. There's one with me. It's a small picture of me with my arm raised, and it just says the Pit Bull. And then it has me and Anthony in the Legends cartoon.
There
That's
you
my
go.
Facebook account.
There you go.
So,
All
you know,
right.
jump on there. You guys can see what I'm doing and what's coming up and where I'm going to be signing my book. Because I'm going to be going on a lot of book tours, so.
Yeah, there you go. So follow him on social media. Go to Amazon, buy the book, and keep track because, I mean, you never know. You never know where the pit bull is going to pop up next and what he's going to do next. Gary, I appreciate you giving me time. It's been so fun talking to you. Like I said, I could talk to you for hours. I'm such a big fan, but I just wanted to give people a taste. Give them a little taste,
Thank you.
a little sample to pique their interest, make them want to go buy that book because they should. They should buy the book and get that inside look on the pit bulls. I was always a fan. I mean, we didn't even talk, man. So much stuff, right? Your time, Francine managing you, different guys, man. I mean, so much other stuff that we didn't even touch on that, man, they need to buy the book. They need to buy the book and hear about all that stuff and everything else. But I do appreciate you giving me time, coming on, talking to me. And like I said, the link's in the show notes. Go buy that book. Gary, thank you again. I know you've got, I think, a signing coming up here in just a
Yeah,
bit.
do I'll be doing a virtual signing tonight. Just
There
get
you
off
go.
Facebook, you'll find it, guys.
There you go. Like I said, follow Gary because he's doing this. He's always doing something. He's always out there active. You'll find your chance to get an autograph, get a meeting, get a picture, get what. There's all kinds of chances. Follow him so you know when and where you can do that. And buy the book again, Gary. Thank you for coming on and talking to me. I appreciate it. I appreciate everything you've done, and I appreciate you. Hey, every time. Not only is Gary Wolf out there doing his thing, but every time the pit bulls out there, it's keeping Anthony's memory alive as well. Let's don't forget that, right? The pit bulls are alive and well. Anthony's alive and well. The memory through you, and I'm appreciative of that. So Gary, thank you for your time, and
Thank you. Got
yeah,
a
have
smile on my face and a demon inside.
Hey, you bums, we have to take a quick break.
Available on all streaming platforms, it's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF Project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to The Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
All right, and thank you to Gary for joining me on the podcast to talk about his career, ECW, and more. Guys, you can follow me on social media. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or The Dave Dynasty, all one word. You can find me pretty much on all social media platforms. Also, go check out the WrestleCopia Network of Podcasts. You can find them at WrestleCopia.com, or you can look up the individual shows on your favorite podcast platform.
Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Go to classicwrestling.net to sign up and then download the Ultimate Classic Wrestling app on all of your smart devices. Next episode, my guest is a surprise. I have a bucket list interview scheduled. This is someone who I've wanted to interview since day one of doing this podcast. And it's finally looking like it's going to happen. It's scheduled. It's on the books. Fingers crossed nothing happens. I'm a bit superstitious with this stuff. Here recently, I've kind of broke that rule. I've announced some guests and things before they were recorded and done. It's bit me in the rear. So I'm getting back to my ways. And I'm not going to announce until it is complete for fear of it following through. So make sure, again, you're following me on social media. It will be released there first if need be. But if this comes through, this will be an absolutely spectacular interview for my podcast. All right, guys, thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening. Until next episode, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we've brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.
Wrestling Nostalgia is copyright Dave Dynasty. Bruiser voice done by John Lawson.